Blog Talk Radio.
Here's an important message from Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr., Senior Pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ.
Did you know that more than half of all the new HIV/AIDS cases reported are among African Americans? Our men, our women, and our children are at risk. We must put aside our fears, exercise our faith, and put an end to this deadly disease. Encourage testing. Learn more about HIV and AIDS.
For testing locations, contact the CDC National STD and AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you for waking up this morning. Well, I'm here in Philadelphia and it is really dreary, rainy. But we have a wonderful guest this morning, Kimberla Lawson Roby. She has written over 14 books. She's been on the New York Times bestseller list, USA Today, The Washington Post, Publishers Weekly. I can go on. She was the number one Blackboard bestseller 4 consecutive months in a row in between 1997 and 2000. And she has so many other awards and achievements. But today we're going to be talking about her new book, Be Careful What You Pray For. And you really need to be careful what you pray for, because as I was telling her earlier, the word for the day is scandal, okay? Just repeat that with me, scandal, yes. I'm going to read a little from her book here. Over the years, she heard a number of people insisting that it simply wasn't possible for any one person to have everything all at the same time, specifically lots of wealth and a perfect marriage. But Alicia was pleased to know that she and JT have proved every single one of them wrong. JT was such a loyal and honest man of God, the kind of man who had made it clear from the start that even though he was dying to make love to her, he wanted them to do the right thing and not have sex until after they had taken their vows. Well, needless to say, I will read some other parts, but it is not what it seems. Good morning, Kimberla.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so thankful for you to call me this morning. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to you know, spend with us this morning. And you are just a wonderful writer. And, I mean, okay, let's just start off with, why did you want to be a writer?
Well, you know, it really is a little different than lots of writer friends of mine, I always like to say, because most writers in general will tell you that they knew at a very young age. Some will tell you, even in elementary school, they knew that they wanted to be writers when they, you know, were older. And for me, that just wasn't the case. And it wasn't until 1995 that I actually sat down and started writing my first book, Behind Closed Doors, and I was 30 years old. So
wow.
Yes. Everything else under the sun after college in corporate America. So I worked in human resources and I worked in management information systems and I worked as a welfare caseworker for the state of Illinois and then I worked as a financial analyst for the city that I live in. So, you know, I'd just done everything that you could think of. But again, it was all business related. But, you know, once I arrived at a point in my life where I felt like, you know, I'm not moving up the career ladder, and, you know, now it doesn't feel like a glass ceiling. It feels more like a concrete ceiling, and I just can't work for anyone anymore, and I really want to do something on my own. And so I started thinking back to teachers as early as, you know, ironically, elementary school and junior high school and even in college, and how those teachers and instructors and professors would say, I should be a writer. You know, I never paid any attention to it, but when I started thinking about, gosh, I want to make this change. I want to do something totally different. Then I thought maybe I should sit down and take a chance at it. And so, you know, that was 95, went through that whole struggle of, you know, finishing the book and not being able to find an agent to take me on, not being able to find a publisher, starting my own business to self-publish it. And, you know, now here we are with Be Careful What You Pray For, the book that you just finished reading, and it's my 14th one.
Well, it's amazing that, you know, people were telling you all along that, you know, you were a writer, but you were kind of putting it aside, and you've worn so many hats. Like you said, you started late, but, well, I'm happy you started.
Well,
I am very
you.
Happy,
thanks
and
very
many
much.
Other people are happy that you started. Let me read another little section here of Be Careful What You Pray For. One of the things that I found interesting is, you know, I don't want to marry a pastor. Let me just put that out there right now. I am not marrying a pastor. It's her fault. If there's a pastor out there who wants to marry me, I'm sorry.
That's what I say the same thing, too. It's like, thank God. I mean, you hate to say that. I mean, I am such a huge believer, and I love God, love God, love God. That is not something I want him to ever put on my husband's mind or in his heart, because that just would not work for me. Me being the person that I am, I wouldn't probably be the best first lady, because whenever, you know, problems and other women would come about, I'd just be me, and that wouldn't be a good idea. So can't imagine the things that many first ladies actually put up with throughout the country.
It's amazing. Let me just read a small part here of the book, another section. JT ended the call. He laid his phone on his desk and looked at the picture-perfect 5x7 wedding photo of him and Alicia. He wasn't sure why she simply wasn't enough. He wasn't sure why he couldn't resist being with other women. He honestly didn't want to hurt Alicia, but he also couldn't control his sexual desires or impulsive feelings. He couldn't help doing a lot of terrible things he did, and he wished there was something he could do to modify his way of thinking. He wished he could be a better man and stop lusting over this woman he just hung up with. But he knew that was never going to happen. He knew JT was going to be JT, and that there wasn't a thing he could do to change that. Wow. I mean, you write, you know, there's a lot of male characters in your books, well, this series particular with the Reverend, and then now the daughter, Alicia, and JT.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of men who would say the same thing, you know, I just can't control myself, or this is just the way it is. Where is the accountability here? You know, I mean, this is an issue that's actually in real life. A lot of women deal with this infidelity issue.
Well, you know, I think that's kind of the most unfortunate part of it, and that is there is no accountability. You know, men like that who sleep with one woman after another and they continue to do it, and then they may be with that main woman or that number one woman, if you will, you know, if you want to call her that, who puts up with it, who is really, you know, in a position, I think, where they're just happy to have a man. They'd rather take that than not have any man at all, and that's when I think we really, really, you know, see the very, very sad part of it all.
Yeah, well, and the crazy, another issue you bring up is relationships between women and best friends. And a lot of women, I'm making a generalization, but they say, oh, I can't be friends with other women.
Right.
And one of the things you bring up, unfortunately, in the book is that the best friend is doing something behind the other woman's back. I'm not going to bring it up. You know, I don't want to, you know, pick up the book, check her website, kimrobey.com. Please buy, be careful what you pray for. But you were a social worker, you were saying, and is that affected some of the things you write about? Or how did you come up with the subject matter, the church and the infidelity, and also in your other book, the shopping issue, the shopaholic issue, that's another issue.
And it is, you know, so much of it has been what I have seen and heard about throughout the years. And so when I worked for, you know, the Department of Public Aid, you know, so of course that was the welfare portion of the state, and you're talking lots of single mothers who, you know, have children where the fathers aren't there, not taking care of them. But in many cases, I did see women who would allow the man to still be around even though he's not taking care of 1, 2, 3, 4 children in some cases, but just happy to have that man in their lives, no matter how he's treating them. As far as the church is concerned, I've been in church, you know, I always tell people, not since I was born, but since my mother was carrying me there in her womb. And so I have seen more than enough, and I've seen the scandal, and I've seen babies being born by pastors, and it's not with their wives. And I've seen the wives just sort of, you know, keep a closed mouth and sort of just go on and still have the smile on their faces and, you know, just continuing to go on to be good women and do what they believe they're supposed to do, even though they know. They know exactly what their husbands are doing behind their backs. And, you know, this is just a problem that I think has been in existence for years and years and years. It's just a topic that people for a long time didn't talk about openly. It's a taboo topic. Yes, it's very controversial, but that's just not something members of congregations wanted to put out, you know, in the opening to other people. For me, I think it really needs to be talked about, and that's why I started writing about it.
Well, I mean, there's so many things, unfortunately, in the African-American community we don't talk about, but then we have so many disparities in terms of our health issues. That's why I played the public service announcement dealing with AIDS, HIV, AIDS, diabetes. We talk about sexual abuse. These are things that I think the church, if no place else, should be a place of safety and for people to come and talk about these particular issues. One of the things you talk about in your previous book, there's a series, for those of you who are not familiar with her work, there's a series with this other character, Alicia, and also her father, who's a pastor. No wonder she ended up marrying a pastor. But the other book, The Best of Everything, and this young lady, she just wanted to have everything. It was the word for that day, if we talked about that book, would be gluttony.
Yes.
It was overboard.
Yes, way overboard. And, you know, that's what happens. If, you know, that you can take that in even a lesser lifestyle, you know, I guess I could say, because obviously her father is very, very wealthy, very well known. But in many households, if you have parents who raise their children and they give them everything, you know, it may be within their particular means, but it's still everything that that child will ask for. Well, what values do they have? You know, then they grow up thinking, I should still be able to live that way, even if maybe I'm only earning, you know, say $30,000-$40,000 a year, which is a great income if you do the right thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
But they believe, wow, I want to live like I'm making $70,000 or $80,000, and so that's why you see so many people in debt and people who are struggling and living paycheck to paycheck, or if they lose their job, you know, they're pretty much finding themselves in bankruptcy or almost being evicted from their homes and kicked out on the street. And so you really have to be very, very careful with the way you raise up your child, because you can raise up an Alicia, somebody who has a shopping addiction, who believes I can only shop at Neiman's or Saks or Nordstrom. I can't shop at any of the other stores because they're just not good enough for me. That's not what I'm used to.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let me just read a small part from The Best of Everything. It says, Alicia felt like she was on a high, and she couldn't wait to sport her new diamonds. She wouldn't do it right away and would have to be careful when it came to choosing the best time to wear them in front of Philip. But once she did, she would enjoy them on a regular basis. That was for sure. It was true that she already had a pair of diamond earrings, but they were round, smaller, and not as noticeable, so she hadn't worn them in a couple of years. I mean, this is ridiculous, but this is a very serious issue. I had a friend of mine who was married, and unfortunately the woman he was married to had a shopaholic addicted to shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And she went through their money, and they ended up getting a divorce. Partly because of that. It was just one of the things, though, I did talk to the male friend about was, why were you guys not talking about this on a monthly basis, like your finances? Because that's
mm-hmm.
an important thing in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said, well, I trusted her, and, you know, she was responsible for certain things. I mean, you're married. Do you mind me asking, how do you balance, you know, I guess, these difficult issues? I mean, the communication, yes?
It's always about communication, and it's been that way. And so I, you know, when you start talking about the financial part of it, one of the reasons I really focused on shopping addiction in The Best of Everything and people living beyond their means is because I am so totally opposite of that. My husband and I live on the totally opposite end of the spectrum, and it's because my mother was that way. So from the time I was a small girl, my mom was telling me, you don't have to have the best of everything. You know, what you do is you make sure you pay your bills on time. You make sure you save for a rainy day. And as a woman, no matter how in love you are, make sure you're always able to stand on your own 2 feet. And so she was telling me that before I was even old enough to date a boy, let alone, you know, grow up and get married to a man. And so that always stuck with me. I mean, she would always even say to me, when a bill comes in, you don't care what the due date is. When it comes into your house, you owe it. And so you write a check that week if you can. And so that's what I've always done. So I've always just sort of, you know, set things up. My husband, because of the way I've always handled finances and the way he saw that I was handling them when he met me, he's allowed me really to be that primary person. But every bank account that we have, it's always been a joint account. You know, when we got our paychecks, it's always gone into the same bank account. And so our money has always been one. Bills have always been paid first. Money has been saved, and then our spending money has always been the last thing that we have, you know, given to ourselves. And so
right. That's
why I think we've always been fine. But that's a huge debate when I have that discussion with friends and sometimes with just women that I talk to on the road when I'm doing events, because a lot of women don't believe that they should come together with their spouses with their income. They should be able to spend the way they want to spend, and they don't want really any control issues when it comes to that. And I think that's why people run into financial problems as a married couple.
Yeah, well, I think one of the issues you do bring up in the book about premarital counseling, and one of the other characters in Be Careful What You Pray For, which is Alicia's friend, she's taking her time. She didn't rush into getting married. She kind of sounds like you, what you just explained about yourself. She does, you know, she went out to dinner, but she's not going to buy extra clothes, and she already went shopping 2 weeks ago. She's not going to go shopping this week.
Yes.
So, but one of the things is premarital counseling, and I think whether you go to church or whatever religion you are, I think that's an important thing that people need to do is to go through those steps, because we talk about In those things, you talk about sexuality, you talk about children, you talk about money, also
mm-hmm.
talking about careers and like your projectile, like where do you see yourself in 5 years and 10
mm-hmm.
years, you know, or what if, you know, things. So that's something else very important you bring up. Your books talk about scandal, but you also provide some solutions, you know, to what's going on with these scandals, and it's just up to people to see them. What's one of your favorite books? You have 14. I mean, is there one that you're like, wow, that is it. I just love that book.
Well, you know, I think I love, you know, probably a good three of them, but for very different reasons. And, you know, the very first book, obviously, because that's what started my career. You know, that's the reason I'm doing what I do. It was, you know, very successful right out of the gate. That just was a blessing, you know, that it happened that way, because that's not always the case. And especially since I had gone through so many rejections from literary mm-hmm. agents and ultimately from the top eight publishers in New York, and then having my husband say, but your background is in business. You can do this on your own. Why can't you start your own company and publish the book yourself? So that's how I even went forward with doing that. Never had entertained the idea of doing it. And, you know, in our household, I always say, you know, we have this great balance with our finances and with our relationship. I mean, we'll be celebrating 20 years in September, but I'm
wonderful,
not
wonderful.
Yeah, so that's just been wonderful. But I'm not the risk taker in the household. My husband is more of a risk taker, and so that's how I think we've been able to balance each other out, and that's why I did go ahead. And then when he said, you need to quit your job and give this 100% of your time if you're going to be successful with it, that's why I was able to do it, because I would have been terrified to do that just on my own. But it just is really about, you know, as you had said earlier, all of this that we're talking about is really about communication, and unfortunately a lot of people in marriages just don't have that. And my husband always says too, it's about being best friends, you know. So, you know, we love each other as husband and wife, but we consider each other to be each other's best friend. So we hang out together. When I, you know, get ready to go to the mall, I'll say, well, you want to go to the mall? I'll say that quicker than I would ever say for, you know, that with a girlfriend. And
yeah.
You know, that's not the most common thing, but we just have been very, very blessed to have that in our lives.
Well, now, what is your, if you couldn't be a writer, you know, you have so many other hats, but just for some reason you weren't able to write, what would you go back to, or what would you go forward to?
I probably, if I had to go back to corporate America, it would definitely be something relating to finance, or it would be relating to marketing. Those are the two things that I still love even today. So even with the writing part of it, I am still very, very much hands-on with the promotional and marketing and advertising aspects of what I do, you know, what it takes to sell a book, what does it take to, you know, build this relationship and continue to build it and keep it with your readers on a national level. As far as the finances, even though, you know, I have to have an accountant, obviously, at the end of the year to handle everything tax-wise, I am still the person who's hands-on with that 12 months out of the year, and I don't give that up because I enjoy it. That's really my real reason. I want to have a handle on it anyway,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I just enjoy that. So it would definitely be still, I'd go back to one of those two areas.
Do you see yourself promoting other writers, young writers, doing workshops and helping them out? I mean, because there are so many writers that get to that wall, like you said, and nobody would, you know, publish their book, and then they may not even have the wherewithal to become their own publishers. Do you see yourself helping or publishing other writers other than yourself?
You know, I do think so. That is still a dream of mine that I would like to do. You know, once I feel like I've probably said enough, or maybe I don't have as much to say, so maybe, you know, there will come a time, and I do think that'll be years down the road, when I don't want to write a book a year. In some cases now, I've been doing two books a year. I would like to publish other authors, and I think it would be nice to have an imprint, because I see so many different books that are out there, and maybe young writers are published, and maybe you never see them again after that first book. And I always say, in many cases, they write much better than I ever could, you know, but maybe the promotion just wasn't there. And honestly,
yeah.
I'm being very honest when I say that, but the promotion isn't there. Promotion is everything. So I think you could write the best book in the world, but if nobody knows about it, then it's not going to matter much anyway. It's just not going to be successful. And so I do think that there is a lot that can be done about that.
That's wonderful. I think a lot of people, like you said, it's just hitting that wall. What do you do when you – do you get writer's block? How do you deal with writer's block? Do you go run? Do you listen to music? Do you go shopping? How do you deal with your writer's block?
But, you know, I really don't. I don't get writer's block. But then I always tell people when they ask me this question, I think I kind of sort of do. It's just not when I'm writing the actual chapters, because what I do is I create a synopsis, which is usually about 3 pages, you know, never more than 4 pages. That's when I'm deciding what the story is going to be about. Then after that point, I create an in-depth outline. So I will say, you know, okay, what is chapter 1 going to be about? I'll write 2 or 3 pages. And then that's what that summary will be. And then I'll go on to chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. I used to try to outline the majority of the book, but then I found with every single book that I've written, when I get about halfway, the book takes on a complete life of its own. The characters really do guide you. You know, you have really no say-so in it, and you just go with the flow. And so they really take on a life of their own, and they become as real as I think they are in my mind. That's what actually happens on the page. So what I try to do is outline at least the first half, if not, you know, a little more than half. So sometimes, you know, as much as 20 chapters, you know, that's what I will do. And then I just kind of go from there. So as I'm trying to figure out and plotting out the story that far, sometimes I will have to walk away from it. So maybe that's where my little bit of writer's block might come in. But by the time I'm writing the actual chapters every day until I finish that first draft, that just doesn't really happen for me.
Yes, yes. Well, I wanted to, I'm going to have a little contest. We're going to be giving away 2 of your books. And if you're listening to the show today, you need to email me if you know T.D. Jakes' name. What does the T and the D in T.D. Jakes stand for? This is Bishop T.D. Jakes. So you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, I'm giving away 2 of Kimberla's books. And if you're interested in trying to win, you need to email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. What does the T and the D in Bishop T.D. Jakes' name mean? You can find it out. You can possibly win a book. Also, you want to check out her website, www.kimroby.com. That's K-I-M-R-O-B-Y.com. Please check out her website. You can find out where she's going to be next. You're touring and doing some readings coming up. Where's your next location going to be?
The next is at the National Book Club Conference in Atlanta. It's at the Hyatt Regency downtown. And so that is where authors, many of us, come in every year, and readers from all over the country come and spend a 3-day weekend with us. And so I'm really looking forward to that. This will be, I believe, the 7th or 8th year, and I've only missed one since it started in 2003. So that'll be a great time. And then I have a couple of library events. Doing something in Lake Charles, Louisiana on the 21st of September, and then also doing an event in Kansas City the first weekend in October, and then something in Baton Rouge at the very end of October. And then that's kind of it. I've kind of made this new rule for myself. I actually made the rule about 4 or 5 years ago that I wouldn't do events in November and December, just so that I can spend those 2 months, you know, with my husband and the rest of my family members. And then the new book will be out in January, and it'll be time to tour for that.
Well, that's good, because it does take a balance. I mean, you're trying to promote, you're trying to make money, you're trying to, you know, market your book. And like you said, marketing is important, but that balance of your family is also important, because that's, without all of this, that they're going to always be there for you. So
no,
I think, yes, trying to cherish those moments. But again, if you're listening to the show today, you can check out her website, kimroby.com. On there, you can find out about all her books. You can find out about her tours. You can find she has some different video clips on there, podcasts, other than mine, but other ones also. And also, A Deep Dark Secret book trailer. That's a really nice one. So please go to her website, kimroby.com. What are some of your favorite writers? Who do you read when you're at home?
Well, you know what? I read... First of all, I'm in a book club, and I have been since 1999, so I try my best to read those monthly selections. But, you know, with my schedule, I have to be honest, sometimes I don't even get to read those. But as far as, you know, my favorite writers, you know, I've always read anything that Terry McMillan has written. Of course, you know, for your listeners who don't know, she is the sequel to Waiting to Excel coming out on September 7th.
So can't wait.
So, you know, but Eric Jerome Dickey, Victoria Christopher Murray, Rashonda Tate Billingsley has a new book out called Holy Rollers, like one of my best books that I've read in a long time. I had such a fun time, such an enjoyable time with it. Barbara Delinsky, one of my all-time favorites. James Patterson, you know, haven't read every book that he's written, but every one that I have truly loved it. And so, you know, the list just sort of goes on and on.
Wow. So not only do you write wonderful books, but you're reading some other wonderful authors. And again, I just want to mention your website again, kimrobey.com. This is the new book, Be Careful What You Pray For. Please pick that up. I want to read one other little section. We have a couple minutes left. This is later in the book, but it says, I said you have it and you will, JT declared. That's what you claimed last week too, but we never got it. But you'll have to have it tomorrow for sure. You have my word. Well, I hope you're right, because if I find out you're trying to stall on us again, the situation won't be pretty. It's going to turn into something very ugly and unbearably humiliating. A lot of people are going to be hurt, particularly those 5,000 members of yours who so blindly believe in you, and you'll be kissing that lavish life of yours completely goodbye. Then he paused and said, you have a nice day. Wow. Yeah, I'm going to have a nice day after I'm trying to come up with $100,000, you know,
exactly.
Being bribed, you know.
Right.
I mean,
blackmail.
This total blackmail, but I mean, I hate to say it, but JT kind of deserved it.
I mean, and then some. So
it's horrible. And the way you describe him, actually, let me read in the beginning of the book, this evil character, who is also a delicious character. Uh-huh. He was almost too good to be true, what with his at least 6'2" body frame, flawlessly smooth skin, coal black wavy hair, and pearly white teeth. I mean, come on, what? Is anybody else in love already, you know?
Is a looker and a charmer.
A looker and a charmer.
Yes.
Well, ladies, beware. But also, let me just bring up, in her book, she talks about women who cheat too, so that she's not just a man-bashing writer. I don't want to give that impression. There are some female characters, but you're going to have to pick up the book to find out who have cheated also. And so it's both ways. Men and women have to deal with this issue. I think of being satisfied with what you have, the grass is not always greener on the other side type of thing,
uh-huh.
You know.
Uh-huh.
And definitely, like your title says, be careful what you pray for. She got everything she wanted, but was it what she needed?
And
you know,
that's the difference. That's the difference. And so, you know, she soon realizes that, you know, slowly but, you know, very quickly that she is, you know, wow, is this really, really a good thing? You know, yes, this is this gorgeous man, and yes, he's very wealthy, and yes, he has this huge congregation, and I get to buy whatever I want now. I couldn't do that with my first husband, who was a great man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but now, is this really the best thing for me? And ultimately, she realizes it isn't.
Wow, wonderful. I just want to say thank you so much again for coming on the show. Please pick up her book, Be Careful What You Pray For, Kimberly Lawson Robey. I wish you much success, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday with your family.
Thank you. You too, Joy, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. And also tell Connie, who helped put this together, please tell her thank you so much for helping coordinate this.
I sure will.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks. Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful Saturday, everybody. If you want to stay tuned, I'm going to be speaking with Naturally 7 at 11:30. That's the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. But in the meantime, again, I'm going to be giving away two of Kimberly Lawson Robey's books. So if you know what TD stands for in the Bishop T.D. Jakes name, please email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter.com/JoyKeys, and you can become a fan of the show on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Again, stay tuned at 11:30. I'm going to be talking with Naturally 7. You don't want to miss that, a wonderful singing group, a cappella, but a little bit more than a cappella, so please stay tuned. Have a wonderful Saturday.
Here's an important message from Reverend Dr. Jeremiah A. Wright, Jr., Senior Pastor of Trinity United Church of Christ.
Did you know that more than half of all the new HIV/AIDS cases reported are among African Americans? Our men, our women, and our children are at risk. We must put aside our fears, exercise our faith, and put an end to this deadly disease. Encourage testing. Learn more about HIV and AIDS.
For testing locations, contact the CDC National STD and AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS.